Hello, everyone, and I hope... Well, we're back. We are back, aren't we? Did that sound professional?
It sounded just straight out of Harry Enfield.
Sounded like you'd be saving that up for weeks.
I know, yeah. What I'm concerned about is I can't hear anything coming out of these headphones. Anyway, I don't think it matters because there's definitely stuff recording. So we're back. So that was a really professional sounding beginning to this particular season. Season, or is that too American? This particular season of Homer Potts Happy Hour. Yes, I've got the name of the podcast in, just in case you've forgotten who you're listening to. And, we're back after a break of about 6 weeks or so. And while we've been doing, you know, various jaunts in the summer. And how is everyone? We've got Martin back as well. He seemed to be very popular during the last one. Me and Stuart spent the last 40 years thinking he was an absolute tosser. And yet, apparently, he was quite good.
It is my deepest pleasure to return. But one thing I have noticed on listening to the first podcast is how uncomfortable it is listening to yourself back. I just thought, what cock is that? Which I'm sure was what everyone else was thinking as
we
well.
We were thinking, that's Martin MacArthur.
That's exactly. We thought, well, actually, you are a complete cock, but no one else fancies the gig. So basically, it's lovely to have you back.
It's nice to be wanted.
It's so nice to have you back.
Yeah, it's been a lovely summer, isn't it? You've been away...
I have been away.
You've been away
of times.
Working, haven't you?
I have been away working. Yeah. Yes, I.
He and says course, work.
And yes, obviously, I've had my knee operation, which was successful, thankfully. So I'm recovering. Still not able to hit any shape balls for another few weeks or months, but generally, I can walk up and down stairs now, so that's a bonus. But you know, generally,
it's good the knee's been fixed because he never mentioned it once, did he? His bad knee.
I've never heard anything about it.
Did you hurt your
knee? I did hurt my knee quite badly. Yeah. I did, but it was okay. The therapy was okay.
Fine. So where have you been this summer?
I went to Palmer with you.
We did,
but that may have been before. Mm-hmm. We went to Palmer, we went to Cape Town. And working in Cape Town. But I have been away. So good. Nice summer. And
sorting out your cricket bat business out there?
I have sorted out my cricket bat business. We had our official launch last Friday, which went very, very well.
Have you found a sticker supplier?
We have found a sticker supplier. Excellent. They're all there. Yeah, they look very nice. We started selling them.
Good.
So, it's busy time at the moment.
What are they called? Can we find them in the shops?
You won't find them in the shops over here, but they're on sale to start with in South Africa.
Right.
They're called SHX, and I am the S.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yes, then.
Who's the X? Have you got somebody called Xavier
called
or something?
No, the X is X Factor because there is an HS out there already.
So
it was either going to be an H or a Z or an X.
Did you know, Martin, that you make cricket bats? So you make a cricket bat and then you basically, the bit that's on it that might say Gunn and Moore or I don't know, who else is
Gray
there?
Nichols.
Gray Nichols. And they used to be Duncan Fernley, didn't they?
Duncan, yes.
Yeah, and Stuart Surridge Jumbo and all that. And you basically, so you make the bat and then you persuade somebody to sell you the sticker. Is that right?
You can do, yes. They normally come with stickers, but they don't want people to go over and just basically
So you see, so, them. So, sorry, we won't be long on the sport here, Loney.
Sorry,
so
just you let see, me know when you're done.
So you're watching the cricket match and you see somebody like K.O. Rahul might be playing with an Adidas cricket bat.
He might be.
But Adidas don't actually make cricket bats, do they?
No, they do. Well, a lot of the Indian market has changed it because they're sponsored by big companies. Like you see people with the Bombay, Mumbai Rubber Factory, MRF.
Right.
They don't actually, it's not a cricket bat.
I will see. So there will be a company not unlike the one you own making cricket bats. And then K.O. Rahul will be paid $500,000 a year to stick Adidas on it.
Not by us, he won't.
No.
That's for sure. No, you have to go and do all the same ways of, getting stickers made and all that sort of stuff. So, it is a bit of a skullduggery where people might not be using those bats. They might be using somebody else's bats, but with other people's stickers. Right. That has gone on for years.
So there you are, listeners. That's your lesson on cricket bat protocol.
We've steamed right in the top quality material so
possibly
far.
The dullest thing we've ever talked about.
Absolutely riveting.
The 16 listeners we have now down to two. after less than 5 minutes. Yeah. Great start.
Well, I found it interesting anyway, Stuart. And if anyone else didn't, well, sod them. Yeah. So how about you, Lonely? What have you been up to? Hello, by the way. You're all
thank
right.
Thank you.
Did
I'm
you say hello
thanks.
To the listeners?
I did. Did I? Yeah. I'm sure I did.
We'll go back and find you. If you didn't, we're going to fine you.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I was... Yeah, no, I had a nice, lovely summer, actually. I can't remember where I got to on my holidays last time I was here, but I've just come back from a nice few days in Sweden.
Oh,
with
lovely.
Took my mother-in-law. She's Swedish, so yeah. A lot of her family is still there. Went up and
did you
right
leave her
up
there?
In the north of Sweden. Pardon?
Did you leave her there?
I'm going to be very nice.
Wishful thinking.
I'm going to be very nice. And my dad actually came with us as well,
oh, cool.
Which is really nice. So he much enjoyed it. It's gorgeous because you were saying you had a connection in Sweden.
I'm a big fan of Sweden. Love mm-hmm. the country. I had a Swedish girlfriend back in the day, and
yeah,
as a result,
I bet she was really unattractive, wasn't she?
Typical,
yeah. Anyway,
yeah.
Carry on.
And as
typical.
A result, jag kan prata lite svenska.
Oh,
did you learn a bit of Swedish?
I did learn a bit of Swedish.
Yeah, that was good. My husband speaks Swedish well.
He's played about 10 musical instruments, and now he speaks fucking Swedish.
Yeah. Banker. That's very good. Yeah, no, it was lovely. Very nice. I had a nice time there.
Able to chat up Charlize Theron. Yeah, great.
She's South African.
She was Swedish, wasn't she?
No, no.
Oh, Britt Eklund, but she's quite old.
Britt will do.
My son came back from Amsterdam last night and said all the people there are beautiful.
They are.
They are.
Everyone in Amsterdam is.
Really?
Male and female.
No. Do you know what? When I lived there, I didn't stand out at all. I was just normal.
I remember getting on a tram in Amsterdam and thinking this bloody tram driver could probably be a model.
Really?
He
that's what he said.
They are so good looking.
That's what he can't. They, he can't get over.
But they're also
it.
Fit because obviously you know we lived yeah. there for a couple of years and we they're also fit because they always cycle bikes so they've
yeah
they just they look so fit. And
he,
they just,
he loved. He wants to live
this.
There. He's just said it was the nicest look, place
yeah,
ever.
It's a great place.
But have you said to him, but you won't look lovely just because you live here?
I didn't want to do that to him.
Don't want to shatter the boy yet.
Yeah. I've never met him, actually. He might look lovely anyway.
He is
but,
gorgeous.
You know,
yeah. But yeah, it is. It's just full of... And you walk around and I was thinking, I better be careful what I say here because he's just full of gorgeous fucking women.
Yeah.
And then I look and think... No, I suspect Jackie's thinking exactly the same. It's just full of gorgeous looking blokes.
Yeah.
And of course, no, they're all tall. Men and women, they're just all really tall.
And they're all nice and they're charming as well.
He said they were so lovely, even in the clubs. He said it was so nice and relaxed and easy. Mm.
Even
and
when
just...
he was knocking on the window on certain
what
streets.
What sort of clubs was he going
well,
to?
I'm not going to say anything about that. No, he really, really loved it there.
Are you coming in? No, clearly not. Clearly. He's a nice boy.
Yeah,
brought
is.
Up well.
What else have I been up to? Went to see Coldplay.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, cheers for that.
Just
thank you.
Just thought I'd remind Stuart because he didn't manage to go.
Yeah, how was your gig, Stu?
Oasis was fabulous, thank you. Oasis, I think I was just before. Oasis, they were brilliant.
They were brilliant,
absolutely
weren't they?
Absolutely brilliant. It was a hell of an evening. It was just like a two-hour karaoke.
Yeah.
It was absolutely brilliant. And the amount of beer.
Yes.
Drunk.
Oasis. I can imagine.
Now, I know it's a totally different demographic, but apparently for the 90,000 people that Taylor Swift brings in, they sold something like 40,000 pints.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently for Oasis, we also put 90,000 people in there, they sold 260,000 pints a night.
Yeah.
And it's just people walking around.
Everybody was in such a good mood. Everybody was so friendly and nice.
Yeah,
it was just a
they
really
were
nice
fantastic.
Atmosphere. They were.
And I'm amazed how... the stage presence of Liam Gallagher, considering he does very little. Yeah.
Stands there with, his hands,
stands there with
his
the hands behind his back and with his bucket hat, and he just goes, but that's all he needs to do. Yeah. He doesn't dance around. He's not like a Bono or a John Bon Jovi or somebody who's got massive charisma. But he just fills the stage. That's fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
But no, I was due to go to Coldplay, and I might have happened to have been in a box. And then we suddenly heard that because of the tube strikes, It was cancelled. We were due to go on Sunday, and so we were coming back very early that morning to go. So, quite frankly, pretty pissed off.
Yeah,
but
it's interesting. You know, I mean, everyone has their own life. I would rather see any band in the world. I think the Coldplay.
Really?
Yeah.
No, I'd love to go. And see
I really
Coldplay.
Loved
no,
it. The whole no show was brilliant. It's the whole show.
I mean, at the end of the day, they'll be there next year because they've been there for about the last 4 years.
Yeah.
Every year, so they'll be there.
They said this is their last tour. Or something.
I doubt it.
Are they all say that?
Times of Frank Sinatra.
Of course, the next farcical queuing up for tickets is going to be Radiohead, isn't it? They've announced they're going to. Well, they said they're going to tour. They're touring Europe. They're doing four nights at the O2 Arena, and people have had to register to be able to then apply for tickets. And you know what it's going to be? It's like 10 a.m. on the 19th of September. There's going to be about a million people trying to pick up 80,000 tickets, and my sons might be very disappointed again. I have said to them, because they don't have a huge amount of money, I've said, look, if either of you get through and you can get five tickets, just get five. It doesn't matter if you end up with 10 tickets, because you will know people who want them, because there's going to be so many people. Even if you don't know people who want them, you'll be able to sell them back to Ticketmaster, and I'll just pay for the credit card bill until the money comes back. Apparently, I think that's what would stop them. But if, you know, if only one of them had got through, because I quite like the guy, and I think Chain would, if only one of them had got through and only bought two tickets when they could have had five, that might be quite annoying. Yeah. But they probably won't get them anyway. No. I saw Squeeze the other day, actually.
Did you?
Yeah. I've always loved Squeeze. They were absolutely one of my favourite bands of the 80s.
Presumably without Jules.
Jules hasn't had meaning for years. But they've still got Difford and Tilbrook, and that's the main thing. Mm-hmm. The two songwriters, the two singers. Glenn Tilbrook's voice is unbelievable
I love Squeeze. I think they're great.
And they were only, it was a festival in St Albans, and because they were only on for about an hour and 10 minutes, because their songs were all 3-minute pop songs, they did everything you could ever want. And they're probably a better live act now than they were, because you've got those two, but they've got six members of the band backing them, and they've got, like, not only the drummer, but a percussionist, and the bloke who plays, one bloke playing a bit like you, Martin, played the piano, got up at one point and played the accordion as well.
Did he really?
Yeah. My kind of band.
But he didn't speak Swedish.
Yeah, but they were just fantastic. It made me think, they sort of tour every now and again, but I must sign up to their newsletter or whatever and make sure I get emails if they do, because they were absolutely
I saw them the other year when they supported Madness.
Yeah.
I saw Squeeze followed by Madness, and they're good. I mean, they just look so old.
Oh, Glenn Tilbrook looks so old. He was such a good-looking lad.
Yes.
And he was very young-looking as well. You know, when he was 21, he sort of looked about 17, 18. And now he's a bit older than us, probably 64 maybe. But he's just lost it. Really.
But you're allowed to look old. When you were a big thing in the 70s, everyone expects you to look like you did then. And, of course, you don't. You're allowed to age.
No, Stuart isn't allowed to age. That's why he dyes his hair.
I'm just not even going to go there.
You haven't asked me what I've been up to, Speg.
Right, Martin, what have you been up to?
Oh, I've just come back from Brussels.
Have you really?
I was there for 10 days. It's probably about my fifth or sixth time going there. Absolutely lovely, just like Amsterdam. Just lovely place, full of smaller shops. And
good-looking people?
Very good-looking people, yeah, which I clearly only added to. They've got a lovely tram system there.
Did you go in your time machine?
My time machine.
Yeah, that'd be quite useful.
I went to an amazing gig, a very small little arts venue, and it was a gig being performed by sitar, didgeridoo, and handpan. Do you know what a handpan is?
That sounds rude. Handpan
is a relatively newly invented percussion instrument played with the hands. Imagine a classic 1960s flying saucer, and you tap on this instrument, and each of the areas of the flying saucer equate to a different note.
Oh, I see.
And they can be tuned in different ways. And so, you know, I've come across them. They're absolutely lovely instruments. But it was amazing to see this
gig. Can you
do
an impression of one?
Not really, no. Right. It would be rather impossible. Think of a Caribbean steel drums. Let's not get back into those impressions.
That's enough, stop.
Anyway, that was a superb gig. Only about 100 people there. Yeah. Very intimate and lovely.
How much was the ticket? I always have to ask.
€15.
15, I'd go to that. That's all right.
Highlight. Yeah, it was about 12, 13 quid, something like that. The last highlight, a couple of days before I left, I discovered a pinball museum, essentially a pinball cafe, but they had about 50 pinball machines.
And
you pay by the hour. And so I played literally about 40 or 50 different machines.
Brussels, is it?
In Brussels, yeah.
Whereabouts did you stay in Brussels?
Okay. Yeah.
I used to live in Tervuren.
Did you?
I did, when we first met.
Uh-huh, yeah. Because you went to school in Brussels.
I got moved there for about 18 months when my dad got moved.
Right.
So I went from there. First met.
Right.
So, yeah, so I loved it. Yeah, it's a great place.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. I go there to cat sit every so often with a lovely friend of mine called Michelle. Well, anytime she goes away, I nip over to Brussels, stay in her flat and have the time of my life.
Oh, that's
sort
perfect
of
perfect plan.
After little Moggins, yeah. And just enjoy myself in Brussels.
Brilliant. The Kimball thing sounds fantastic.
Oh, honestly, I'll be going back there again.
Because we ought to go, because I got asked, because I used to go to the British School of Brussels. That was why I got sent when I was there.
Yes.
And I got asked about 18 months ago whether I would go back and talk to the kids at school about, you know, the books and the animation, all that sort of shit. And I've said, oh, yeah, I'd love to, love it, but I've just never fixed it up. So next time we'll go, I'll go and do a day or so at the school.
And we'll go to the pinball. Yeah. Lovely.
And we can go and see the Mannequin Piece. Well,
lovely.
Terribly, yeah. Terribly.
Well, you're all invited to Michelle's. She doesn't know this yet, but you're all welcome.
I take it Michelle's not a listener.
She listened to the last one because
you were on it.
She's probably listening to this.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that all right, Michelle?
Thanks, Michelle.
Thanks. Cheers, Michelle. We'll probably should do the washing up.
Speaking of ticket prices, so we've already got our tickets. We just bought our tickets for next year's cricket, Headingley. Can't remember where England are playing next. Who are England playing next summer? Going to be New Zealand or Pakistan. It's one of those. Headingley, £97. 5 years ago, £50 at Headingley. Yeah. Cricket ticket prices have almost doubled in 5 years. Do you think that's the IPL doing that? Because they have to give the England cricketers a much bigger contract now so they don't go and play elsewhere.
Yes. Yeah. Ben Stokes isn't cheap.
No.
He wants Joe Root isn't cheap. They want big money. Stop them playing. So, yeah, ticket prices is really the only way that they can...
Everything's interesting, isn't it? You know, you look at
to go to Lords.
You look at, and I'm not going to get into politics or whatever. We mustn't get into politics, but you know, you look at what happens with inflation, and you sort of think, I don't know what any government could possibly do when certain things get so inflated. Ticket prices like that, just doubling in prices in cost, and there are so many events and things that happen in the UK, and the ticket prices for everything have just they've just gone astronomically expensive. And I suppose it's supply and demand. While people are happy to pay it, they'll keep putting the prices
up. And for the amount of hours that you are actually at cricket, it's still quite reasonable.
It's quite good value compared
to most of
tennis is the same. We went to Wimbledon this year and had a good day, and that was about £90. And about 5 years ago, that was more like 50 or 60. But you do sort of get 8 hours of
sport. Of entertainment.
But talking of cricket ticket prices, about 18 months ago, so March 24, I happened to be in India and England were playing India, in the north of India, Dharamshala. I went up there and just caught the last day.
Oh, that's where the Dalai Lama
the last day of play. How much was my ticket to get in?
About
£8.
Yes, I was going to say less than that. I was going to say less than that.
That is an amazing stadium, isn't it? The mountains in the
superb
background.
Himalayas in the background.
Beautiful place. Yeah, absolutely. Sort of
and the atmosphere was wonderful. I mean, India already won the whole test. And so to watch the Indian
the test
fans.
Series,
the test series, lauding over the England team, taking the piss, having a really good time, for me was quite good fun. I'm sure you wouldn't have enjoyed it, Stu, but it was fun.
Great place to go.
Yeah,
that's on the list, on the bucket list.
Did you see? Did you stay in the Tibetan part of Dharamsala or the Indian part?
Now,
the Tibetan
I'm
part's
not sure.
Up the hill.
I stayed a few miles outside.
Oh, you didn't actually stay in Dharamsala.
Not in Dharamsala. Right. No. Suddenly, all the taxi prices were enormously inflated.
Yeah.
What would be about a quid or two to get somewhere suddenly became 10 or 20 quid. I mean, they were milking it nobody's
business.
Were
there a lot of English fans there?
Not that many, but I mean a few, but vastly outnumbered by the Indian fans.
Yeah.
But a good event to go to. I loved it.
And they thought you can pay an inflated taxi price, Englishman.
That's exactly what they did think. Yeah.
And you're really coming, paying £8 to get in.
You're
did you actually
pounds.
Enjoy the day, though? Would you go to cricket again?
I would, but I mean, I go every so often with some mates of mine. A bit less for the cricket, more than just it's a lovely day out, sitting down with three or four mates, chatting away
for the whole
day.
I think that's what most people go to the cricket for, even when they're big cricket fans.
So,
I went to see Essex recently. I'm not an Essex fan at all. Went to see Essex in the One Day Cup, just because I knew some people who were going. It was fantastic.
No, that's a good day.
I didn't care whether Essex won or Glamorgan won, but it was a really good day. nice ground and easy to get to. All good. Sorry, should we get off the cricket?
Is this Glamorgan really? For you? Is that a winner?
I think we've done cricket to death.
I think you're
going
right
into the fine detail of the bats they use.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Moving on.
Moving
yeah,
on.
Oh, it was the ticket prices. That you know what I'm like, right, the ticket prices. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that sort of thing. It gets on my goat, so I thought I was going to bring that up. I get told by my wife not to be so tight.
Really?
Really?
What's a wonder that?
What are the chances of that?
Maybe she does know you better than we think she does.
Oh. Yeah, yeah, well, there you go. So anyway, Stuart, we've talked about what we've all done. Have we talked about what you've done or we weren't interested?
No, we weren't interested.
Cause no, don't, because it might get us back to cricket.
That's how we got into cricket bats, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So we've got lots coming up, listeners. We've got loads coming up in this podcast because we've got lots to talk about. We haven't been around for a while. But after 20 minutes and 11 seconds, it's time we go off for a break.
That's because we're pros.
We are pros. And I need a coffee. I might need a wee as well, actually. Ooh. I don't think I've had one since I've been here. So we'll be back in just a sec.
And we're back, and it's time for the bit you've all been waiting for. Who snuffed it since we were last?
Ah, yes.
We love that one.
Yeah, we do. Yeah.
It's proved to be hugely
has
popular.
Has there been a lot?
Yeah, loads of people. So I really like the who snuffed it bit.
Oh, do they?
I know. That's people good. Are obviously a bit morbid.
Yeah.
So we've obviously got quite a long list since we've last been here. Mm-hmm. So we're going to start at the top. Dame Stella Rimmington.
Ooh. MI5.
Yes, very good, Martin. She was 90. Right. She was 90, old Stella. So, yeah, she was. She did well.
So she was like, I mean, she was ahead of MI5. So she was literally like M.
She was M. She was M.
Mind you, I don't suppose she was an old lady when she was ahead of MI5, was she?
No. Well, she probably wasn't. She was 90. She's probably retired a few years ago. Yeah. So, yeah.
She probably a very nice index-linked pension.
I suppose she had a very nice pension. Trust if you think that. James Whale.
Yeah, yeah. Sad. The funeral was yesterday, I think, wasn't it?
It was the other day, yeah.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah,
it
he was quite young. Sad. He was 74, I think he was.
Did he die of kidney cancer? Because he had it about 20 years ago.
Yes. He's been fighting it for a long time. And he did his own podcast charting his own demise. Aww. Bless him. Yeah, I did listen to one, you know, not so long ago. Interesting. I mean, nice guy. Seemed to be.
Yeah. Oh, I quite like
it. He was quite Daily Mail in some of his views.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
He was a bit. But if you look back on his TV stuff, it's the sort of stuff you could never make now.
No.
It was so sexist, wasn't it? Just
never, ever getting that. And really, really sad. And you fancied and you really hoped he was such a good bloke. Ray Brooks died.
Yeah, I know. That was really sad.
Who's
Ray Brooks?
Oh, that's what I'm asking.
Is it something to do with football?
Stuart texted me and said, Ray Brooks has died. And, of course, I knew exactly who it was.
Well, you're going to have to spill the beans.
Oh, is it going to be something to do with Thunderbirds?
No.
Oh, no.
You're on
the right line.
Almost. He was the voice of Mr. Ben.
Oh, was he? Oh.
The narrator. And everything.
He was a narrator.
And who he meant?
Yes. He was... And there was only 9 episodes of Mr. Ben.
Yeah. No, that's not possible.
Yeah, no, 9.
I watched it all the time.
Every time. I know. There's only 9 episodes.
Can I just say one thing?
Yeah. Thank you. For doing that. That was quite sad.
Uh-huh.
And
who else you got?
Biddy Baxter died.
Did she?
Biddy
Baxter. Did you not know that? I did not know she died.
Biddy Baxter has put her Harrodin.
She was a Harrodin, wasn't she, apparently? Yeah, yeah.
Bit of a ruled Blue Peter with an iron. Yes.
Did you say this? Who's that?
Yeah.
You're not doing very well today.
I'm not quite with it.
Famously the producer of Blue Peter for decades and forever.
It's like a national institution.
Yeah. She was the one who made all the rules. She was the one who forced Janet Ellis to leave because she had a baby out of wedlock and all
really?
That.
Oh,
God, that wasn't Blue Peter. We weren't doing that.
Yeah, it doesn't happen on here.
Put a Blue Peter badge on that one.
She sounds scary.
She was a bit scary, apparently.
She had sort of Princess Anne hair.
Did she?
She had long hair that was sort of, you know when they sort of pull it all up and it gets sort of big and bouffanty around the head and all that sort of thing. Yeah.
And Terence Stamp. died.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the beautiful man. Yeah.
No, I was going to say that. Was he beautiful?
Yeah.
Because loads
of people.
Back
in the day.
When he was young, he was.
Yeah, I suppose he was very distinctive looking, wasn't he?
Yeah. Would
you say he's classic? He wasn't classically good looking.
Well, the thing is, I suppose, I wasn't aware of him when he was young because he was so bleeding out. I was probably only aware of him the first time was when he was in Superman 2.
Oh, yes.
He was and Zod. He was probably, what, in his late 40s, then mid-late 40s?
Yeah, that was early 80s, probably,
yeah.
Wasn't it?
Yeah.
Because, of course, he went out with Julie Christie, didn't he? And fair fucking play for getting that one, Terence. Wherever you may be now, fair play. That's outstanding work, my son. And, of course, immortalised Immortally Sunset.
Yeah, that's right. Terry the Kings. And Julie.
They meet every Friday.
Yeah.
Yeah, so fair play. And not quite as sad, Joe Bugner.
Yeah, I've got Joe Bugner down. I wrote down a couple of celebrities, snuffed it on the
Joe
train.
Bugner.
Yeah, Joe Bugner died.
Boxer.
Okay.
Boxer. Yeah. That's all I know about him.
Thank
Boxer.
You.
It was unfortunate. He was very unpopular because he was the one who basically ended Henry Cooper's career.
That's right.
And Henry Cooper was well loved, wasn't he? Yes. Like the nation's favourite sportsman.
He was.
And Joe Bugner beat him, and he was only 21, wasn't he? He was a refugee from the Hungarian, you know, when Russia invaded Hungary in 1956. Mm. Do you know that?
Oh, be quiet.
No, I wasn't taking the piss. I just wondered whether you did know that.
did Joe Bugner famously fight Muhammad Ali?
Twice.
And was it called the Rumble in the Jungle?
No. He did fight him twice.
Thought I was being very clever.
Well, he didn't know. He fought someone else for the Rumble in the Jungle. He basically fought Muhammad Ali twice and hung on to him twice and didn't let him go.
He lost some points.
He lost some points twice, but he barely swung a punch in either fight. But he just tried to hug him
for
12
years and years, and he came back because, you know, he was famously, when he was 21, he beat Henry Cooper, and that's why nobody liked him. And then his career was basically ended when Frank Bruno knocked him out.
Yes, he came back as Aussie Joe.
Yes, just a total.
He went to Australia and he came back as Aussie Joe. So less, but if you saw his face, Graham Greene, the actor, died.
That's right, he did.
He was in Dances with Wolves. He was always, he was in loads of like CSI.
Yeah.
He died. And a good one for you here. Giorgio Armani died.
I saw that. Oh, he was another good-looking man, wasn't he?
He was a good-looking man. Yes, he was.
Wasn't very tall, but...
No.
Yeah, that's sad.
Yeah. He was 91. So good innings.
Good innings.
Have you ever an Armani suit?
I have a Armani couple of jumpers. I don't believe I ever had a suit.
Right.
No, but I have been in an Armani
From Italy
shop.
Or Turkey, are they?
Well, no, they would be proper.
All right.
None of this.
We did like Armani Exchange or something, wasn't there? Yes. Armani jeans, like a different version.
Yeah, nice. Not like no, he did things. And Digesto, quite sad, from Supertramp.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Yeah, Rick Davies died.
Rick Davies died.
I bloody love Supertramp.
Oh, my God. I do.
He played the piano bit to school, didn't he?
Yes.
Oh, I mean, that's just...
I was worried
one of
fall
the
downstairs.
Greatest pieces of piano.
Would it be bad?
That one, Martin.
Which track?
School. It's called School.
I'll look it up then.
It's the first track on Crime of the Century.
Yes.
Followed by Bloody Well Right. I mean, he wrote Bloody Well Right, actually.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah. So Breakfast in America, that's right up there, the greatest.
Yeah, I think Crime of the Century and Breakfast in America, those two, absolutely brilliant.
And now they hated each other, didn't they?
Absolutely.
Really?
Hated
each other. Yeah. And who else?
There was another one for Loney, of course. The Duchess of Kent.
Yes.
Now, that was very sad. I really liked her.
Well, I hadn't realised until she died, and I saw a bit of an obituary, that she basically gave up. She stepped back from royal life, not to move to America and slag the royals off, but to go and teach in a school.
Yeah,
she was a music teacher.
Taught
music in a local state school.
And completely incognito.
She was called Mrs. Kent.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I really liked her. Yeah, she just stepped back completely.
I say it's amazing. I mean, it's what people do as jobs in the real world. But for a royal who married the cousin of the Queen to actually do that, when she could have just kept going to Wimbledon every year.
She could have done
it was worth being the Duchess of Kent just for that, wasn't it?
Absolutely, I'm sure she might have flogged her tickets because she wouldn't have hurt much teasing kids.
She definitely didn't marry her husband for his looks.
She absolutely
God
did
love
not.
Him. And I mean, recently,
he's
I mean,
gone,
he's
really.
Just like...
He has been slapped with the ugly stick.
Yeah.
Fuck, he's ugly.
Wasn't my brother used to say he fell off the tree and hit every branch on the way down?
He's on the start of EastEnders.
I mean, she was an attractive.
She is a good-looking girl.
Even on his wedding day.
Yeah, like, you're thinking, if you can't make an effort on your wedding day, when are you
you're
going
in trouble?
He was definitely a misfortune of genes that should have been a little bit more.
Yes. Mm. However, ancestry helped him out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was slightly punching.
Sure, he's not
his
complaining.
Weight.
Yeah.
No. And talking to someone who was supposedly beautiful, if you like that sort of look, Lonnie Anderson died.
Lonnie Anderson.
Come on, who was Lonnie Anderson married to?
No, I don't know
who
Lonnie Anderson is. Chop, chop, chop.
She was married to Burt Reynolds.
Right.
She was the peroxide blonde. She was in that...
Oh.
Thing in Cincinnati, yeah. WKRP thing in Cincinnati. She was the archetypal 70s and 80s
platinum blonde. Was she?
Big hooters. And she was, and she was married to Burt Reynolds, and she had this dreadfully acrimonious divorce from Burt Reynolds.
Really?
Dreadfully. So she died. And the last one, you won't get this one, but you'll wonder if anyone's ever heard of him. His name is Ronnie Randall Jr. And he died 3 days ago.
Ronnie Randall
Jr. You will get this, and you will get this when you realise who it is. Mm-hmm. And Ronnie Randall Jr. was a stuntman.
Oh, was he?
And
right.
He did a very, very famous album cover.
Oh, he wasn't the Burning Man and Wish You Were Here, was he?
He was the Burning Man.
Was he?
Well, good.
Now, if that's a quiz question, you would have got 2 points and a big slap on the back.
Yeah.
He was. He was a bloke on Pink Floyd's Wish You Were Here.
Yeah.
Who they set on fire. Okay. Which actually, not that anyone's going to know, is actually, I have a poster of it in my gym.
Like everyone should, surely.
Yeah, of course.
Well, there you go.
So that was a long list of... So if I've missed anyone else out who's died, I do apologise to them. Obviously, it won't be any good because they're dead.
So, mate, if you've died in the last few months and we've missed you out, give us a postcard.
get your relatives to sue us. So that was celebrity snuff.
And I'm just going to mention this. We're not going to go through the emails this week because we haven't really got time. But we did get an email from Neil Harrison.
We did.
Yeah.
Now,
I know Neil Harrison, and he did say he'd sent an email. So
and
we thought,
that is correct. He did.
We're going to read it. And he sent a very long email. It was really worth reading. I say, Neil, it was very worth reading. We don't understand your quiz at all.
In the slightest.
No. We read it again and again and again.
Yes.
You've explained what would be a really good quiz for us to do, which you heard in a pub, but we don't quite understand what you mean.
No.
So I'm going to give you a bell, and then if you explain to me what it is...
We will try and do your quiz.
We will try and do it, yeah. But it sounded like you needed a bit of music going on in the background.
You might do. One of your quizzes, Neil, was slightly not very 2025. So we will not be doing that offer of a quiz. Thank you very much. It's very nice of you to write it anyway.
Yeah, yeah. So thanks for that, Neil. And I'll see you soon. But I'll give you a bell soon. I'll see if I can find out what on earth you were talking about.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, so that was that one.
So, Lonely, what have you come on? Let's let you in. Oh, she's got love hearts all over.
I'm doodling.
She's heard about Terrence Stamp. She's got love hearts going on all over the place. What have you been watching on telly?
Well, I've been really loving The Handmaid's Tale. Have you watched it?
No, I gave up after
the
first series.
I've watched a bit of it, yeah. It's quite gripping.
It's very dark, but it's very...
I think I might start to watch it now.
Yeah.
Because of certain parallels that I'm a bit concerned about.
Yes, yes. I've been watching that, and I'm on season 4 now, and I'm really enjoying that. What else? I've watched that documentary about Bonnie Blue.
that's the lady who shagged the world.
Yes.
Yeah. You say lady.
Well, it's very strange. It's very odd. So, yeah.
Does she spend her time trying to justify why she did it? Or does she just not give a monkey's what anyone
She thinks? Doesn't really give a monkey's. She's doing it. She's happy to do it. It's her body. She can do what she like and getting all this followers and all this. But she's having death threats. Her family having death threats. I mean, it's pretty awful. Well, what she does
is... People's mothers, probably.
Yeah. One boy, his mum took him. So they were all lining up. All the men are wearing balaclavas.
And his mum
took him. Because it's really quite horrific. I can't believe I admitted that I watched it.
Maybe
I should move on.
1,000 people.
1,000 men.
I've heard somebody online I read worked out that was like 40 seconds per person.
Yeah,
it's just quite a long time then.
You'd be all right.
I mean, I had to go twice.
It's just the most soulless,
it's
empty
disgusting
thing that you could think of to gain notoriety.
Yes, it's so horrible. Yeah.
What's
it's
going
so
on
horrible
with the world?
Surely, surely you could kill a couple of people and bury them under your patio. Surely that would give you
the
notoriety.
You can't believe that she has done it for any other reason than to monetize it.
Yeah.
But has she been able to monetize it?
Oh, yeah, she's worth millions.
But what? Because of advertising and followers
Followers and OnlyFans.
She sells OnlyFans.
People are subscribing to her videos and stuff. Yeah.
I read something the other day about how a load of, you know, professional athletes who haven't quite made it at the level have just all turned to OnlyFans to make like tons of money. You know, a load of athletes who didn't quite make it, went to the Olympics but finished seventh.
I'll go and do it. Who didn't quite make it.
Go on OnlyFans. Go on OnlyFans. Thankfully, we don't need the cash.
I feel the OnlyFans market.
I'd love to think
that's the only reason. Yeah. Well, I've considered it.
I'm trying to think what else I've been watching now as well.
I saw
Below Deck. I do love a bit of Below Deck, but
that sounds like the Bonnie Blue bloody thing, doesn't it?
That's like in the Mediterranean, a very posh yacht, and it's all about the crew, isn't it? I've watched a couple of those.
That is good.
Yeah, soul destroying.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Is that soul destroying as well?
Yeah. Well, no, it's not bad. It's just sort of another version of reality TV soap nonsense.
Yeah. Which, you know.
I did go the other day, and I sent you a picture, didn't I? I sent you a picture of Bill Gates' mega yacht.
Oh, you did?
I was in Nice the other day, and I walked past Bill Gates' super duper duper yacht.
Did you say he's selling it?
He is selling it for something like $465 million. Or is it? That's what he bought it for, and he's now selling it for $500 or something. And apparently he's just like never, barely ever used it.
And I bet he'll end up giving most of that away, won't he?
Well, he
gives
it
a lot of his money away.
He does, doesn't he? Yeah,
he set up a trust. I mean, he's going to end up with very little of all the money that he's earned. He seems like a fine fella.
I sort of think it's fairly ludicrous that he's not going to leave his kids anything or something.
Well, I suspect he probably is, but his mum, but his wife, won't she?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I suppose, yeah.
I mean, I suspect he'd probably quite willingly pay $465 million to make sure he doesn't appear on the Epstein list, which apparently he's
right. Speaking of which,
we're talking about that's the next segment.
Is that what we're on
that's
to next?
The next segment.
Yeah.
This boat is, I mean, some of the boats around this harbour, I went to Antibes. I went to Nice for the weekend.
There. That's when we're going there for our first.
And apparently, if you go around for Monaco,
four nights in Antibes.
If you go around for Monaco, then a load of the bigger boats go to Antibes because apparently Monaco's not deep enough. The water's so they have to go round to Antibes where apparently the water's deeper and you can get these much deeper boats in them.
And if you see a picture of his boat, it just shows to you that money can't buy you taste.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Monstrosity. Really? Well, I think it's not. I don't think it's very pretty.
Yeah.
I said, Bill, it's a very nice offer.
Sort it out.
But I prefer that one over there, if you're going to be honest.
Look, yeah. I mean, they are, the thing with those, you need to have a massive crew as well. It's not just buying the boat. It's the cost of keeping
it. Well, we, years and years ago, we were on holiday in Antigua, and we just happened to go down to English Harbour. This is like early noughties. And we speak to these people in this bar.
Is Montego Bay in Antigua?
No, I don't believe
so. Is it not?
And we found out these people were the crew for Spielberg's boat.
Oh.
And we thought, oh, that's kind of quite interesting. So we speak to them and they said they're employed all year round. They basically are waiting for, they'd sail the boat round the Caribbean or whatever. And then when they get a call, wherever he may meet them by his helicopter, they have to go sort of rendezvous there. He flies in and he says he's coming for 2 weeks. He says the longest he's ever stayed on the boat is 4 days.
God.
Wow. So they said he will literally maybe a week a year.
It's amazing when you hear about people.
And they just stay on it and live on it.
They stay on it, live on it. And the captain tells them what to do. They, you know, perfectly clean. Yeah. He sometimes lets his mates use it, they said. But yeah, no, he's just...
Yeah, people get jobs. Like my current wife has got a friend in a tennis club.
Your current wife?
She doesn't like me mentioning her name on the podcast.
The horse at work, in case she gets letters.
So she's got a friend at the tennis club whose daughter's boyfriend, I hope you're keeping up here, he's a chef. And he managed to somehow, they're not sure how he got it, but he got a job as a private chef for some American hip-hop producer, who I'd never heard of. But this bloke has millions of followers on Instagram or whatever. So he's obviously quite a big cheese. And he lived in the UK for about 3 years for some reason. He must have had a lot of work over it. And he had a house in, I think she said it was in Kensington. And he was his private chef. But this bloke would just, he'd disappear for a month and do various bits and pieces. And then he'd come back for 3 or 4 days and this guy would cook for him. And then he'd disappear off again for 3 weeks. And he's been employed as his private chef just to be there and do absolutely nothing.
Would you like that?
In a big house.
I would quite like that.
Just waiting for this bloke
you
to turn
just,
up again.
Yeah, live in the house and just enjoy it.
This guy's not a he's not a Michelin starred chef or anything. In fact, I saw this lady the other night. She said she doesn't even think he's qualified. He's just good for him. She seemed to like him.
He
was in the right place. Yeah. This bloke, obviously, maybe he's good at whatever this bloke likes, but doesn't actually do an awful lot of cooking. But sadly, that gig's over because he's gone back to America now. But he managed to hold this thing down for quite a while without doing a lot of cooking for him.
Lucky.
That's what you want.
That's what you
want,
get a job
like that. It's perfect. Perfect. Yeah. Anyway, so Martin.
Yes.
You were going to tell us something. Haven't you got a vague showbiz story to do with
you? I do have a showbiz story. It's the second instalment of Paramedic Tall Tales.
Good.
Oh, right. Is it a tall tale? Is it a lie?
No, it's all absolutely true. Oh, but it's really quite a fantastical story. It's a bit of an anecdote, but feel free to jump in, ask questions, whatever.
We will. We're not shy at that.
Yeah. Have you met anybody?
I know you're not. So I'm on duty. I'm working in a double crewed ambulance, so a big ambulance this time with a colleague. And we're standing by. We're in Kensington, Knightsbridge, that sort of area. And a call comes down for a 25 or 30-year-old jogger who has fallen and bloodied his face. And so we're very close to that, and we're on our way there. And I'm discussing with
Did you not say, that sounds like a bit of first aid to me. Do you really need an ambulance?
The opposite. Oh. We both thought that this could be a cardiac arrest because young people don't generally fall over, and you're normally able to break your fall. If you fall and face plant yourself, it's because possibly you've passed out.
Right.
And so we thought this was going to be a cardiac arrest. And when we got there, indeed it was. Oh. But as we got out of the ambulance, an A-list celebrity had been the person who witnessed this jogger fall, Dustin Hoffman.
Oh!
Yes. So, and it was him also.
Like you do.
Yeah. I got his autograph quickly and then...
Quick selfie.
I mean, you get a history. So I did ask sort of Dustin, my mate.
Did you say, can I call you Dusty?
Was he Dusty by the end of it?
Yeah.
Can I call you Dusty?
We got him to tell us what Dusty. He had seen. But I mean, you know, when someone's in cardiac arrest, you're on that patient straight away. Yeah. You're on the chest doing CPR.
How did you know he'd had a heart attack or a cardiac arrest?
But you mean before we got there?
No, when you got there. Unconscious,
not breathing. You will check their carotid artery, which is in the neck. Right. And if there's no pulse there, then heart not working. You'll give them a shake just to make double sure. But all those obvious signs are that someone is in cardiac arrest. Yeah. We'd got there within minutes, which is good news for the patient because the shorter the downtime, the more your heart is going to respond to being defibrillated. And so we got on the chest, put the pads on, shocked him once, instantly got him back or got his heart beating again. Yeah. A defibrillator, people think it restarts the heart. It doesn't. It stops the heart. And what it then allows the heart a chance to do is to start beating into...
Right. So it's like turning off a computer and turning it on
basically,
again.
Yeah, exactly. And so as soon as we shocked him, within about 5 seconds, he was went from lying flat on the ground to starting to sit up and sort of asking what had happened. You're in quite a sort of a fragile state when you've just been in cardiac arrest. So, of course, we were pushing him back down so he could lie down and relax sort of thing. Relax, you say that. He was quite confused, which is what happens when, you've been deprived of oxygen for a period of time. And then we get on with our job and we're cannulating him, putting a needle into his vein just in case we need to give drugs and so on. Dustin Hoffman, all during this time, is loving it. He's standing around and he's witnessed the whole thing. We get the patient onto the trolley bed, get him onto the ambulance, and Hoffo, he's still there, right? He's standing by the ambulance, and he's going to us, "Great job, guys! Great job, guys!" Which we were loving. Yeah. We were loving it. And anyway, we get this guy into hospital, and he's the talk of A&E, right? Because we've told him on the way in, "Oh, Dustin Hoffman was the guy who witnessed your cardiac arrest."
Was he the one who phoned?
Yes, he was the one that did call 999. Really? Yeah, that's right. Yeah. But then this story goes mental, okay? Because the Australian jogger, he had been diagnosed with an enlarged heart, okay, which is, you know, a condition that some people have. And he'd been advised by his doctors that he could exercise, but he couldn't exercise to the fullest extent, as it were. He wasn't allowed to put too much stress on his heart. Yeah. And during this jog that he was having, he was quite close to home, within 5 minutes of home. And what he had decided to do was to run full pelt from where he was back to his front door. Right. This was enough to put his heart into cardiac arrest, which is what caused him to stagger and fall in front of Dustin Hoffman.
Right.
So he kind of, you know, almost brought it upon himself. Yeah. He since has had a pacemaker fitted. And so if it ever happens again, it will give him an immediate...
It just jolts you back. Yeah.
So, or an internal defibrillator fitted, rather. It'll just give him a little shock to get his heart started again. So he's now the talk of A&E, and all the doctors are loving it because old Hoffo was the witness, sort of thing.
He didn't come in the ambulance back with you, did he?
No.
Right.
No.
Would that be the dream?
That would have been.
Yeah. That would have been great, wouldn't it?
Dream, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Although Dustin, we did, by mistake, pick up Dustin Hoffman's own personal bag, actually, and put it on the ambulance, thinking it belonged to the patient.
Excellent.
I know, which was super.
Great plan.
We did actually have a leaf through his notebook, and he had notes on a movie that he was doing at the time. Yeah, but anyway, blah, blah, blah.
That's the sort of thing that you do, your stalker.
I totally would do that.
Then the story goes mad, because the Australian jogger, he starts contacting newspapers because he wants to start a campaign to put public defibrillators in public places. Yeah. So a fundraising thing.
Phone boxes, for instance.
This sort of thing, that's right. None of the papers were interested apart from The Sun. And he didn't know The Sun's reputation, okay? The Sun were supposedly interested, but the only thing that they were interested in was the fact that Dustin Hoffman was there, okay? And so they spent about a week trying to get a quote out of Dustin Hoffman, and Hoffman, lovely bloke, very self-deprecating, was not interested in getting any publicity for this whatsoever, so completely ignored all the Sun's advances. In the end, the Sun, about a week later, printed on their front page, "Dustin Hoffman saved my life," in reference to the Australian jogger, right? And which amused me and my crewmate no end,
because we thought we'd done that.
Then, right, this story just goes worldwide mental, okay? So it goes from The Sun to all the other newspapers in the UK, then to all the broadsheets in the UK, then it goes international. And I'm not kidding, just simply because of Dustin Hoffman's name, it ends up in the Angolan Times, the Californian Gazette. I mean, literally, there's almost no publication around the world that you could mention that didn't use this story. It was the biggest story that the London Ambulance Service had ever had in their history. And I know that because my sister-in-law worked in the publicity department. Right. And so this was all going on. I was taken off the road in order to do interviews. My crewmate was like doing interviews for Radio 5 Live. I mean, it honestly did go mental. But then it goes stratospheric, okay? Some weeks later, Hoffman is being interviewed by Graham Norton for this movie that we were rifling through his notebook, reading all the notes for. And they bring up the fact that that he had been witness to this cardiac arrest, and they prime the audience by putting up the front page of The Sun in front of them, so they're all aware of what's going on. They, at the end of the show, bring on or put the Australian jogger into the red chair. Oh, you know, they'll tell a little anecdote, right? Yeah. So he starts telling the story. "Well, I was running along in Hyde Park and I had a little cardiac arrest." Right, and it's slowly dawning on Hoffman, who's sitting there quite innocent, that this must be the bloody idiot.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm taking the mic. But what they did was obviously bring him out, and then there was a lovely little reunion between Dustin Hoffman and this Australian jogger live on stage, sort of thing. Me and my crewmate were in the audience, and Aussie jogger says to old Norton Chops, "Oh, the paramedics are in the audience," and he goes, "The paramedics are in the audience."
Really? We
jump up, right? And it's like, well, honestly, my 1 minute of fame, as it were, just trotting down the aisle. I go up and meet, you know, the various guests they had on the show. I think it was Billy Connolly and who's Ab Fab? Jennifer Saunders was on the show
That's
as well.
Great.
Just sort of shaking hands. And that was just, you know, the sort of thing that just doesn't really happen to you in real life. And it was quite embarrassing because there were crews across London doing this 20, 30 times a day without any kind of notoriety, just getting on with their jobs. I mean, as indeed we were, but suddenly Hollywood A-lister suddenly turns your world upside down and the world goes mental.
So who got in touch with you to get you in the audience?
That was, we had to return Hoffo's bag to him. And by there, then there was a connection between Hoffman's office and and my crewmate, who, for whatever reason, kept in touch. And somehow he then got wind of the fact that Hoffo was going to be on the Graham Norton show. And I don't know the intricacies of it, but it became apparent.
So in a way, so when that guy was on the red chair.
Yeah.
Did Dustin sort of feign surprise? My God, it's him. Because he must have known something was going on if you were in the audience. And his,
would he,
and
did, his wouldn't office have recognised us from Adam.
No, but his office must... Did his office not say to him,
No, honestly, it was a complete surprise for Hoffo.
Right.
He didn't know that he was being set up. I mean, it was quite a notorious story being on the front page of The Sun, so that wasn't unusual that this was brought up in the interview. So that didn't raise his suspicions at all. And, yeah, when Aussie guy was in the red chair, it did take a while for Hoffman to click, actually, and realise kind of who it was, what was going on, sort of thing. So,
comes out of it pretty well, doesn't he? He's going to come out as a pretty great guy.
Very much so. Yeah. And, you know, afterwards, we went backstage. Dustin Hoffman turns out to be an absolutely lovely guy. Spent 20 minutes with us just chatting away. I mean,
did you get a selfie?
Yes, of course.
Well, good.
Yeah. I mean, he could have buggered off in, chatting to us for 2 or 3 minutes, but he was lovely and he gave us his time.
Did you go in the green room?
We were just chatting away in the corridors.
Did you tell him you went through his bag and all his stuff?
Didn't tell him that.
No, I put a homing device in his bag. So basically, you're the stalking.
That's brilliant.
He's tiny, isn't he?
He's small.
He's very small. He's very, very small.
Did you tell him you were mates with Stuart?
I didn't tell him that.
No,
should I?
You should have done. Yeah.
Okay.
Definitely told him you could speak a bit of Swedish as well.
That's fantastic. It's nice when you hear that they're nice person. You know,
very
their celebrities are nice and take the time and
very
everything.
Very much so. Yeah.
Oh,
it's always easy when you do it. Every now and then you have some sort of brush with massive celebrity and you realise you have no idea how crazy the world goes.
No, that's right.
And you think this bears no resemblance to anything in real life.
No.
Just because you're a famous actor or a famous dancer or a footballer.
And things get completely out of your control. And you know Marina Hyde, the columnist in The Guardian, who loves to slag people off. I became one of those people, okay?
Really?
Oh, yeah. She became a subject of one of her articles, and she described us as breathlessly recounting the story about the A-list celebrity that we'd met in not a particularly complimentary way. I didn't really give a shit. But as I say, things just develop a life of their own, and you're not in control anymore. No. It was quite a weird situation,
It's Marina Hyde who does... The rest is entertainment.
That's right.
With Richard Osman.
That's right.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. I mean, I don't think we've got time for a quiz this week.
Get out of town.
Do you think it's very important that we do a quiz?
I think the world will get over it.
I think the world will get over it.
Yeah.
Change it up a bit.
Yeah. I think this has been snappy. And I think...
Snappy. Like a crocodile handbag.
Yeah. And I think 55 minutes is long enough for anybody, isn't it?
Lovely.
Sure, it should be.
Yeah. Yeah. So... We're not going to have quizzes. I did have a quiz lined up. Lona looked a bit disappointed when I told her the subject matter, so we'll come up with a quiz that you prefer a bit more, actually, next time. So that was lovely. So,
it was lovely.
So we'll be back. Well, we think we'll be back in a fortnight's time,
sure,
don't
we'll
we?
Back,
we've got a bit of logistics to sort out. But we'll see you in a fortnight's time. Nice to see you again, Martin.
Lovely.
Down there.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Martin. You're welcome. Welcome. You want.
Yeah. Yeah. And we'll see you soon.
Yes.
Loney.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll find out about. Oh, she's got all sorts of things to tell us.
So much stacked up.
So much.
Yeah,
so
I'll much probably have a few things to see you next time as well, because I never normally go travelling, but I'm about to. So we'll see you or speak to you all, or we won't speak to them, will we? We're not really speaking to them. You'll hear us in a couple of weeks' time.
Bingo.
Bye-bye. Cheerio.
Bye-bye.
Homer Potts Happy Hour was recorded in the United Kingdom and is fully owned by Stewhead Publishing Limited, whose owner is an absolute bellend.